All right, so here we are, worldwide live on the internet. Thank you, BBS, for providing service. We are still welcoming people on the conference phone line, and here we have another person joining in. I welcome you, and if you want to, please say your name and location. But only if you want to. And I welcome you all on the internet through BBS. Thank you so much for being here.
So we will have session 7. Saturday for the loved one.
Yes, correct.
It's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I still have to find time to go back and listen to the other earlier sessions.
Don't worry. Be happy.
I welcome
the next one. I'm worried about it.
Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
Yeah, Michael Waverly.
Good evening, Michael. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
If you want to.
We welcome you.
If you want to.
All right. All right. All good?
That's this coming Saturday, the session Saturday.
Section 7, yeah, this Saturday.
7 or 6?
Well, it's called Session 7. I didn't say it at the time. Session 7.
Session 7. I missed 6 somewhere along the line.
Well, that's what the love one makes simple. Session 7.
When did he have 6? Saturdays ago.
No, it's been a while. But I can look it up for you.
I think last month. Was last month.
Huh.
Are they always in the morning?
Yes, the same as a.m. Pacific. And I welcome those two callers who just came in. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
5663. Sorry.
Ladies first, please.
Corey.
Is it Corey?
Lori with an L.
Hello, Lori. How are you doing?
Great.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And I believe I heard a gentleman.
This is Shriek. Hi, sorry.
Hi, Shriek. How are you doing?
Very good, sir. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Welcome to the next caller. Please say your name and location.
Rosalie Tappan.
Hello, Rosalie. Good evening.
How are you?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good.
All right. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
This is Suzanne in Perrysburg.
Hello, Suzanne. Good evening. Welcome to the call.
Thank you. Hi.
Thank you for...
Hi, Suzanne.
What people joined in, Rock, please say your name and location.
Hi, this is Terry.
Good evening, Terry. Glad to hear your voice. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you.
All right.
Hi, Terry.
Very clear tonight.
Hi.
Hi, Terry.
Nice to have you with us. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Lucy.
Hi, Terry. You sound very clear on the phone tonight.
Oh, I'm glad. Who's that?
good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hi, this is Carla from Kentucky.
Carla Rickard. How are you doing, Carla?
Hello, hi. I am 12. Hey, everybody. God bless you.
Hi, Carla. Hi, Carla.
It's been too long.
And now we need to. Now we all need to join in. I just called to say I love you.
Hello,
how are you?
Thank you.
Same location.
Hi, this is Don and Brexel. Hi, hi, everybody.
Hi, Don. Good
hi,
evening.
Don.
Hi, everybody.
Carla, are you walking yet?
Well, you know, I take some steps with my husband. I'm just not quite able to do it all by myself yet. No.
Oh.
That day will come. We'll see.
You will. You will.
I will. Absolutely.
Yes.
More people tune in. Welcome you all. If you want to please location.
Hi, Nancy in Michigan here.
Hi, Nancy. Hello, Wynn.
Hey.
Busy, Wynn.
Hi, Wynn.
We hear you, Wynn.
Hi, Wynn.
You hear me?
Hi, Wynn.
I've ever heard you talk.
I gave those called in a chance to announce themselves. Please say your name and location.
This is Cindy in Peoria, Arizona.
Good evening.
You're cutting out. I can't hear you. I don't know if it's my phone or yours.
Can you hear me clearly? This is Wynn.
Yeah, I can hear you, Wynn.
Yep.
Okay.
Hi, Joel.
Joel and Scott.
Is Terry here?
I'm here.
Hi, Terry.
Oh, hi.
Well, I guess we are all ready. I mean, I guess we're not ready, but that means we can start. Is Lyra here? Lyra. Hey, Lyra, are you there? I hear. Do I see Camille in the background there? Hi, Camille.
Hi, Wynn. Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Nice to have you.
Ben, I haven't been here for a while. I'm happy to. It was funny. I just turned on my computer and saw your email and thought, boy, I better jump on that call tonight.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
How's it going?
Yeah, you're an old soul, Camille.
Oh, yeah. I had to do a little clearing the past couple of days, but I'm ready for this new equinox.
You know, being an old soul can be, I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse.
It can be looked at both ways, like a half glass or half full glass of water.
The older the soul you are, the less you fit in, you know. In this realm.
No kidding.
The more you have to create your own path, you know, because the realm doesn't have anything that matches your energy, you know? And
I agree.
You know, and then you got to be woken up so you even know you're an old soul, because otherwise you just think you're crazy. Okay? And we all qualify for that, right?
Speak for yourself.
Who is that, Jim?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Yeah, don't be afraid so. Jim is an old soul that's still discovering it. Still thinks he vacillates between, are these guys crazy or are they onto something?
So you're saying that no new souls come onto the line here? Or only us old souls?
No, I'm not saying that.
Are we a holding tank for old soul ideas? And
I would guess that, you know, that people that keep coming back tend to be old souls, okay?
Yeah.
Because
we feel comfortable with everybody on the line, I think, because everybody kind of knows each other, but we don't really, but we do.
Yeah. Is anybody new on the line tonight?
I'm a young soul.
Who is that?
Dave.
Dave?
Wynn, you ought to know I'm a young soul, Wynn.
I'm not so sure.
I ain't been around much. That much I know.
Rin, what about
That's Dave and Mesa, okay?
Yes, I'm a young soul. I just didn't care if anymore. That was my thing.
I think
you're a medium soul. So-called indigo children.
I'm a medium soul.
Crystal children and indigo children. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah.
Well,
pioneers.
Yeah.
We're pioneers.
Well, you know what? Maybe I'll answer that question after we start the recording, okay? I'll tell you about it, okay? Because it's an interesting subject, and I'm not going to take over the line on the subject because we're going to talk about something that has to do with Ross tonight, with Carla, and new ways of understanding it. But here we go. I am going to start a recording. Are you ready? No? Here we go.
This conference is being recorded.
Hey, this is September 23rd, 2013, with Terry and Carla on a Monday night. And our overall subject is Ra, Egypt, and the Law of One. And it may go anywhere, but that's where we're going to start. And before you guys that are listening, if you ever get a chance, and if you've never called in live, call in early, and because it's a great time to people have fun saying hello to each other. It's, we have kind of a community that some people. That really helps. It doesn't help everybody. You may have your community and you're in it wherever you are in the world right now, but usually people who are, what we were saying was that people that tend to keep coming into these calls regularly tend to be old souls. And they come in because they get a resonance of that on some level is familiar to them. And being an old soul in this realm is no necessarily a great thing, but it is what it is. Being an old soul means that it becomes really hard to fit. It becomes really hard to find people that resonate with you. And oftentimes, old souls don't know they're old souls. They just feel alienated and oftentimes crazy. And when they start hearing our material, and we have a lot of it, and this is the value of this material, it starts to wake you up because you have cellular memories. Even though you don't remember it in your conscious mind, you have cellular memories that when you hear things, certain things, that you can resonate with them, and you say, I feel that, I connect with that. And some of you connect when you hear about the life of Jesus. Some of you connect with Egypt, with Greece. Some of you connect with the Enki Enlil story. Some of you are still figuring it out. And here's the advantage of being an old soul is that when you can tap in to your matrix, you have a lot of wisdom and you have a lot of ability to share with other people. And you have a lot of ability to have compassion for all kinds of different people. That's the good thing about being an old soul. But you got to tap into that. You got to tap into that ability to do that. And until you tap into it, you feel like, am I crazy? What am I doing here? I don't have a purpose. Nothing matters to me. I'm not interested in what other people are interested in. I don't care about this. I don't care about that. I certainly fit that profile for many years of my life. What am I doing here? Why am I here? And I certainly understand it. And I know I have wisdom, but I didn't know how to find a way of bringing it into the world. I just was inside me. And, you know, I could observe things, and I felt like I could see patterns and motivations in people that other people didn't see. And I did it in my music. That's in my writing poems. So I won't say I didn't know how. That's how I started bringing it through. And oftentimes, those poems and songs that become the most popular amongst people tap in to that law of one connection. Those artists that do that. And for a period of my time, life, and still, I still think maybe I want to do that. But for a period of my life, I really wanted to do it, and I saw it as my best expression that I could think of. And of course, I couldn't have ever dreamed that we would be doing what we're doing now. But, you know, who are people that are artists that really exhibit the law of one who have gotten extremely famous? You know, I thought I'd give you one guy who, when I was younger, I would have thought he was very schmaltzy, and he is schmaltzy, but he loved his audiences, and his audiences loved him. And he was alone, and he stood alone and was able to manifest his music in such a way that he created a great, loving energy. And there's a lot of people, but this one in particular. You know what I mean, Carla?
Liberace?
Not Liberace, but maybe Liberace. Liberace probably fits that, right?
I thought so, you know, in a...
Yeah.
Era that was not particularly acceptive of gays, he still managed to be himself and still, I mean, he had a personality that, you know, but I mean, you could say Elvis Presley fits that. You could look at Elton John for that. You could look.
Yeah.
Who are you thinking of?
I was thinking of Barry Manilow.
Excellent, excellent. Well, he was helped along a lot by, what's her name, Bette Midler, who really understood him.
Uh-huh.
He was her piano man for a long time, several years, when she was singing in those baths, those Turkish baths. But yeah.
In New York.
Manilow, for sure.
Yeah.
And a lot of people just absolutely love him.
And I don't think he ever got corrupted. I mean, he always was humble. He always loved his audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he picked really touching songs.
And a lot of people dismissed him because he wrote lollipop songs. But, I mean,
right.
Those emotions are very real.
Right. But, of course, art is the way that spirit comes through to the masses. And on that note, since we're going to be talking about the Ra group in Egypt today, I hope this doesn't sound too bad. I prepared a song to play, but I didn't download it, so I'm going to have to do it through the microphone. So I hope it's not too bad. And it's called Walk Like an Egyptian. Do you remember that song, Carla?
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, I do.
Let's see if it'll play. It starts to play. Why didn't it play? Wait a second.
And yes, that's if you run them all about. Let's pardon all, oh, I suppose I'm a Cadillac.
Oh.
Fine old
song. Uh-oh. I guess that's what we're supposed to play.
died. Did you hear it?
Yeah.
I don't know the lyrics to that song. I don't know if it's one of those really big, high... Egyptians, the pyramids shouldn't exist, but they do. And
So there must be some kind of secret to this whole thing. There must be things that are not in the public consciousness, that are not in history, at least not the written history that's put out in encyclopedias and in television shows and books. And two people that tapped into the history of Egypt, the unwritten history of Egypt, one was Edgar Cayce, and the other was Carla Rucker. And as is in the common knowledge, Ra was known as the sun god in Egypt. Ra was a god that people worshipped. And I think that when we today look back at all those god names, we think it was mythology, that they weren't really gods, and that these must have been ignorant people making up stories so they have something to believe in. I used to think that, okay? Because it sounds too crazy. All these gods walking around, where did they come from? You know, people must have made it up. Well, probably that's not true. And that the Ra group, you know, I made the premise that the Ra group was connected to Edgar Cayce. And that was a big, big, huge leap for me, because that was the thing that made me write that book. And how did I connect the Ra group to Edgar Cayce? It was connected to the Ra material. Well, I had studied Edgar Cayce years ago, and I knew the whole story from Edgar Cayce, talking about his past life as Ra Ta, 10,500 B.C. And Ra Ta was an Egyptian high priest, and he was doing, according to Edgar Cayce, all these miracles of healing, and he built pyramids, according to Edgar Cayce, by levitation. And he did it in a partnership with another being that, according to Edgar Cayce, it was named Hermes. And according to Edgar Cayce again, and I remember reading this, and I said, how do I put this together? There's something here. Edgar Cayce became known as in Egypt, this early lifetime of Edgar Cayce, as Ra, the sun god, okay? Now, when I first read that, I never heard of Ra, the group soul. In fact, Carla hadn't even done her Ra channel. This was probably in 1970, 75, that I was studying Edgar Cayce. And I kept thinking, there's got to be more to this. Who was Edgar Cayce? How did he build the pyramids? How did he become the Ra, the sun god? How was he doing miracles? And then I started studying Carla's Ra material, and it was really clear. And they never talked about Edgar Cayce. They never mentioned his name. All they said was that the Ra group, remember, who is the Ra group? The Ra group is a group of souls that have graduated this realm, millions and billions, perhaps, of them, that, according to the Ruckert material, had lives on Venus and graduated Venus and became a huge group soul in service to the evolution of those beings that were still stuck here going through their evolution, and like us, for example. And that when they were going through their evolution, and I think on Venus, maybe prior, I don't know, not too many details, they indicated that there was another group soul made of graduates that was helping them, just as they are helping us. Do I have that all right, Carla?
Yeah, that sounds right.
That sounds right? Okay. And so, how does a group soul help us? How do they do that? What do they do? What are they working on? Well, you know, we've talked about this before, and I don't think you can, you know, when we talk about this, in one of the things in the book, that there was an indication that is, as you study us, we study you, which means I have this idea that when we are talking about the rock roots, they are in the energy space right now. And many of you who are on these calls are learning to notice energy spaces. This is a very subtle thing. Very, because it doesn't knock you over the head. But it's subtle. How do you describe it? It's a change in the flow.
Frequency.
An expansion.
Try
Pardon
frequency.
Me?
Try the word frequency. It's a change in frequency.
A frequency. You use the word frequency, but, you know, when I think of frequency, I think of vibrations. I used to be a physics major, electronics guy. But there's a change of resonance. Suddenly, you feel something different. And one of the aspects is time starts changing. Many of you have noticed on these calls this aspect of time changing, it goes fast. Sometimes it goes really fast. And as you experience time moving faster, it means you're accessing. This is my interpretation. I've never heard anyone say this. I don't know if Carla has ever said it or came up with this, but as you experience time moving faster, there's an indication that you're moving your field into a higher density, a higher dimension. And that's how one of the ways, one of the benchmarks in this realm, that's happening. Time moves faster. And did you ever come up with that, Carla? Did you ever think of that?
No, not in those words. Not exactly like that. I haven't made that connection. I have thought about as the vibration, as the tone of the conversation grows higher, you sort of lose time or forget time, and you're sort of not attending to time in the same way. And I have thought, well, I must be moving into time-space. I'm moving into the density of the origin of these vibrations, which is higher. So I
When you were channeling, did you have the experience that if you spend an hour, it just went like boom, like fast?
Well, I would not have any idea how much time it's on. I was always the most surprised person in the room when I heard the recorder snap, and that meant it was 45 minutes into the channeling. I'm like, gosh, I haven't been channeling that long.
Right. Well,
yeah.
I mean, this is my theory that the way time passes is a relative indication of the density you're in. Like, many people now are noticing how fast days go by and how fast weeks go by. And other people who are in great struggles, and of course, when you're struggling, time moves very slowly. And when you're in pain, time moves slowly. So I've observed that, you know, my theory is that the way time moves, the speed that time moves, is some kind of indication of what density you're expanding into in a given moment. And I don't have that refined to a a thesis, but it's just that it's been so consistent that I think it's true. I mean, I know when I'm talking and we're on these calls, by the time the call's over, it's like, I used to think, how am I going to spend an hour? What am I going to do for an hour to keep people interested? And then by the time the call was over, it was like, wow, it's over. And then I don't remember anything. it's kind of like whatever we said here just passed through. So not losing our focus to Ra and Egypt, there was this amazing thing in the book one of the Ra material that Ra had made an intervention in Egypt. It was a major intervention, and that they were making an attempt to change the vibration of the people here, to make a contribution to change that vibration. And they had a high priest, I think he was a high priest, indicated that in Egypt, that they had an affinity with. And they were working with that high priest, and they built the pyramids by levitation. And they also manifested bodies that could be seen by the population. They were not bodies that were born. They were not bodies that came through a conjugal relationship. They were temporary bodies that they could manifest that would be visible to the people around them. And this was in Egypt, approximately the same time period that Edgar Cayce had a past life in Egypt. And it was building the pyramids by levitation. And there was no mention of Edgar Cayce, just the high priest that they had a resonance with. Just as in the Edgar Cayce readings, there was no mention of a group soul. But there was the indication that this in an early lifetime of Edgar Cayce, there were all these miracles taking place and healings taking place. And of course, that very much endeared the people to whoever these beings were that were showing up. How did they look, Carla? They described their appearance. They were tall. Weren't they blue? Was blue part of it?
No, they weren't blue. They only half appeared, and they were sort of light, like white.
Mm-hmm. So they were semi apparitions, right?
Yeah, they about halfway appeared and halfway not there, but they were obviously there. But they were light beings, and they had simply clothed their energy body with enough light to be seen by people.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't on purpose. It was because of the effort needed to build the pyramid, I believe, that it was done
mm-hmm.
to do this.
Because they opened the door for a huge amount of negative influence in this realm. It may not have happened otherwise, and their intentions were to do just the opposite. And Egypt, when I started studying Egypt, I found that Egypt, for thousands of years, was doing sacrifices, was doing that mummies were designed to entrap souls so they couldn't continue to incarnate. And that there was all these magical rituals. There was all this fear instilled in people to keep control over them, like the control of weather, like and looking like power. And, you know, when someone in this realm exhibits power, and then they say, if you don't do this, we're going to turn that power on you and you're going to be cursed, it's a pretty scary thing. And it's easy to feel like I better do what they say. And so essentially, all of Egypt was under the same auspices as the Illuminati today, the dark forces today, the secret societies that are using this same energy that perhaps directly came out of Egypt. And it's what the Ra group looks at and says, we really made a mistake. And I think, what did they say? We've had to stay in your realm. And they didn't think they could ever reduce the distortion that they created by this intervention. And apparently, they had to get permission to do this from the council that regulates the solar system. Am I correct?
Right.
They needed to get permission because, in general, Earth was off limits. And to create a situation where they would manifest bodies and be visible needed permission from the sub-logi system on the rings of Saturn to allow them to do this. And so for thousands of years, Egypt was under the auspices of the negative. Until, now again, when I was early on this, I was like trying to figure this out. I'm giving you the benefit of a number of years of looking at it, because initially it was like, do I trust this? Do I not trust that? What do I trust? Do I trust the Ra group? Do I trust the Elohim group? And I had read the Ra material, and, you know, they basically said, don't trust channelings, pretty much. They said, when a positively disposed person starts to channel, the negative will invariably try to sneak itself into the channeling and look like it's positive. And suddenly you have a mixed polarity channeling going on. And that happens all the time. And so when I'm in the middle of channeling, and I'm in the middle of having these two women channeling, I am like, got my guard up, and I'm saying, how do I interpret this? I used to call Carla. I knew Carla when this first happened with Daphne. And I would call her and say, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? And I would talk to David, and David just totally freaked out over it. He said, oh, my God, what is my biographer doing? And he was thinking that I must be negative. I know he thought that, because the negative, well, it's very hard to figure out what's positive and negative in this realm. And that's why people are sending me things all the time and say, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? And I'm not going to answer unless I have very, very strong feelings about something. It's so tricky that this week somebody could be positive, and next week they could be negative, and this week they could be positive. And you have to look at, if you notice, when we do these calls, we are not saying, Ra said this, Elohim said this, you're supposed to do this. We are all operating from our own volition, from our own discernment, and we can look at all these materials as a research project and say, what can we derive out of all of this that's useful, that helps, that's helpful? Not anything to give up your power. and your decision making and your discernment. And so
the when the Confederation channels through our group, they invariably begin by asking people to use their discernment and use only what resonates out of what they say and leave the rest behind. And then they'll go on with it, but not without trying their best to safeguard the free will of the people listening, because, you know, people are so liable to be easily led and just think, well, I think we can just trust the source. Let's just kick back and enjoy it. And I think, yeah, you kick back and you enjoy the session. And then you go back and you kick the tires and see, well, do I resonate to this? Do I resonate to that about it? And really try to separate the wheat from the chaff, as it were. Really important.
Didn't the raw material indicate that the Ra group was responsible for the creation of the tarot cards?
Well, yes. They indicated that they had a version of them that they had used on Venus in third density as they were going through third density, and that it had helped them to achieve more of a discipline of the personality. And because it had helped them, they thought, well, we'll try this out as part of the initiation process to achieve purity amongst those whom they were training to be channels for the love and light of the infinite creator. And the theory was that it was very important to be able to enter the silence, control the mind enough to enter the silence and stay in the silence, and like hold a visualization. And as you're holding the visualization, then that frame of mind is a vibration. It is. You have to have a certain vibration in order to do that. And in that vibration, according to your personal tuning, you can begin to receive information from the Creator through the gateway to intelligent infinity. That's the way it was explained. And there was a long series of questions that you'll find in various of the sessions, because of the fact that Don was not just interested in Egypt or in one thing in particular. All his life he had been looking at the entire range of paranormal activities, including Western white ritual magic, like the Golden Dawn Temple and so forth, and was very interested in the positive temple that before anything had happened to those temples to cause, you know, Aleister Crowley and that crowd that got all confused with some negative material and got lost. So he was always asking about what it took to be more of a magician, more of a disciplined personality, because it was something that he was personally interested in. So that's why you keep finding Don working on Tarot and then going off on the magic personality, because you need that discipline in order to be able to work with the cards.
Do you know why the Tarot works?
Why do you think the Tarot works? Or why do you feel that it works?
Well, you know, I never did Tarot, but when I was younger, I used to do the I Ching. And did you ever do the I Ching or read the I Ching?
With pennies, I've tried it.
With pennies, yeah.
Very intriguing.
And I would always get amazing things come up, but the really amazing thing about the I Ching was the depth of the wisdom that it was written with. It was written with an understanding of how the substrata of energies work in this realm. And it had 64 hexagrams. And then I did astrology. And I was I was a physics major. I totally could not figure out how astrology could work.
you know, it was one of my first girlfriend in college was into astrology. And in recent times, in recent years, I reviewed all of that. And I said, I came to my own conclusion of how I thought those things work. Because it's one of those things that it's easy to give your power up to. It seems so amazing that you could throw some cards, tell me what to do, tell me what to do. Or flip some coins, tell me what to do. And in truth, I don't think I would do those things now. Because the problem is, well, let me just tell you how they work, and then we can go from there. You know, we've learned from the raw material that there was what Ra calls the Logos. And the Logos perhaps was, could we say the Logos was the one infinite creator, Carla?
Yes.
So the first cause would have been the first awareness. And we don't have to get too woo-woo on this. We can just think of awareness. We know what awareness is. Somehow, there was an awareness. Something knew that it existed, which meant somehow it knew about time. Because you can't have existence without a before and an after. And somehow, what was originally perhaps chaos became aware of itself. And it also became aware, there's a mystery, that's the mystery. That is the ultimate mystery that I don't think will ever be solved. How did nothing become aware of itself? How did it organize itself to become aware of itself? That as much of we can solve of the mystery, because we do solve a lot of things, there's a certain point where it's not solvable, it's not understandable. But if we assume there was an awareness, and that awareness was the first cause, and it didn't think of itself as God, it said, well, if I'm aware, it's kind of boring to be here by myself. And it learned that it could create. And it could create subdivisions of itself, which were other awarenesses.
That's
and
exactly
so...
the law of one puts it, by the way. So
pardon me?
That's not the way the law of one puts it, so I'd like a chance to speak to that.
The law of one does not say it like that?
No, it says that using the first distortion, which is free will, the creator decided that it wanted to know itself. It's a curious creator. And to know itself better, it, using the second distortion, which is love, it manifested portions of itself, holographic portions of itself, which are us. We are co-creators or sub-sub-logoi. And then he stepped back to see what happened, to see how it all went down, because he wanted to know more about itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found that to be a very understandable way to look at the Creator, because I am a part of the Creator, and I will report back to Source, and the Creator will be richer in knowledge for all of the emotions that I have felt and all the places that I have been, that which I've witnessed to and that to which I have responded and how I have responded. All of these things are part of the Creator now. As I do them, I give them up to the Creator, and the Creator learns more.
Well,
I find that to be a very comfortable way to look at it.
Okay, I'll go along with that. It's actually just a different, I think it's kind of a different way of saying the same thing, but maybe not. Nonetheless,
moving right along.
creation started taking place. And if I have it right, the first creation from the Creator, the first awarenesses are what we now call the Elohim. And then the Elohim were created. Every piece of creation was given its own authority to create from where it stood. So the Elohim started creating, and they started creating a physical universe. And they started doing that through frequencies. And a lot of the questions I've asked cover that. And then the pieces of the physical universe were all alive. Everything had an awareness. And each piece of the physical universe would create the rules for how awarenesses would develop under that part. So you have galaxies, and the galaxy has an awareness. Then you have solar systems, and they have an awareness. And then you have planets, and they have an awareness. And then you have humans, and they have an awareness. And so the entire universe is alive with awareness. And we are at the perhaps bottom of the pile. And each of us can still create in our sphere, and we create the rules and the laws of how we create into our life. And so there are these nested holograms of awareness of energy to go right back to source, and each one, each area has its own rules, and we are connected to all of the rules of all those areas. So the tarot cards create a correspondence between various larger holograms and us. And we are in those holograms to a certain degree. And by using the tarot cards, it helps us to tune into the correspondence, and they match certain decisions. I can't, it would take a long time to put it into words, and I'm not even sure I could successfully do it. But astrology, I Ching, tarot cards all relate to the correspondences of the bigger sub-logi to the smaller sub-logi, and that since our consciousness is always moving around in all those higher logi to some degree or another, but we can't see it, that various kinds of divination methods map the correspondence so we can look at symbols and trigger ourselves to understand the correspondences and how we can use that understanding to make better decisions in our life. Do you understand that, Carla?
Well, I like the way that you approach it. I think that's a good way to do it.
Yeah. I don't know if people understood that. You could talk like for a couple hours just on that idea. But, you know, I had enough experience with astrology and questioning myself. How could planets and constellations affect us? And the only way that could be real is if the part of us was expanded into the planets and the solar systems and the constellations. In other words, we are everything, but we're contracted into a small physical body, and we all have lost our connection to all that, most of us have lost our connection to all that is. And so symbolically creating representations to the larger patterns of the universe helps us expand and helps us tune in and maybe get intuitive, triggering our intuitions, because our intuitions are much more directly connected
to the greater universe than a logical mind. And that is what I came up with. In any case, the reason we're talking about all this, and it's 6:57, is that on Saturday, Carl and I are going to do session 7 of the Law of One Made Simple series. And I know from the feedback of people that have participated that there's always some key triggers that come up that help us understand ourselves better. And of course, we can assume or postulate, I won't say assume, but postulate that the Ra group is going to be there energetically paying attention. And that, you know, they have clearly stated that they work with those people that ask. And one of the things we're learning about is, can we trust the Ra group? And if we trust them, can we ask them? And how can they help us? And being on these sessions on Saturday, the Law of One sessions, I think helps tune us in to their frequencies. And Carla, anything else you want to add? It's going to be Saturday morning at 10 a.m. I sent it out on the announcement.
Come and listen with us, and we will have fun working through chapter and verse, you might say, parts of the Law of One. You can follow along on lawofone.info on your computer. I'll do my best to keep you, you know, so that you can actually read what Ra said, what we're talking about, and be clued in so that you see where we're going. And,
we have a suggested donation, but you can donate as little as $5, and you get all 21 hours of calls. It's like a university course in the Law of One, which you can listen to on the way to work, listen to on trips, download it. So I hope you'll join us, and I thank Carla for being here tonight, and we'll see you Wednesday when we answer questions.
It will be a joy to be with you guys.
And you're all unmuted, and DBS is probably going off the air momentarily. And we'll see you next time. Thank you.
It was so much.
Bye, Wynn. Bye, Carrie. Bye, Carla.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you.